If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm joined, as always, I say it every single week, by the main attraction, the main event, the icon that can still go. I've been watching too much Retro Raw. Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm very well, Kenny. How are you this week? And hang on a minute, before you answer that, let me just make sure that you are in fit condition to perform in this podcast.
I mean, that's a valid question. I am fit to perform, but I've been inundated, Finn, because let me just explain. So last night I go to the WWE house show at the Hydro, right, which we'll get to in a second, the show itself. And I'm sitting watching the show. And you know when you're at a wrestling show, sometimes you want to amuse yourself in some way. So it gets to the break and, the intermission of the show. And WWE have a graphic that they put up on their screen saying WWE intermission. And I thought, well, here's a funny tweet, right? I'll just tweet out a picture of that and say, WWE have announced a pay-per-view coming to Glasgow in May. And all these people are going, oh, I was phoning my friends there and then I realised the joke and it's all funny, blah, blah, blah. And I go to bed and I wake up and Dave Meltzer has reported on Wrestling Observer Radio that there is going to be a pay-per-view in Glasgow in May, because I put out a joke tweet saying there would be intermission. So I didn't quite expect that when I woke up this morning, to be honest. So,
obviously didn't check that one with his sources, did he?
No, he didn't. He did not. You wouldn't have caught you putting that in Power Slam magazine.
No, you wouldn't have done.
A fan on Twitter noted that there's going to be a pay-per-view. But anyway, yeah, I do feel quite bad about that, but,
No, you don't. You don't feel bad about it at all, do you?
No, I don't. I really don't. So I want to kick off with some good news for you, Finn. I want to know if you're behind this. So anyone who's listened to all 24 of these podcasts before, you'll notice the first week or two, if you go back into the archives, that Finn was trying to, masquerade how he felt about John Cena, right? He was, being very kind of, coy about how he felt about Cena. And then by episode 5, he was just ripping him a new arsehole, right? So, and now it's just his acting, his wrestling, whatever, anything goes. And,
To what category does Total Bellas fall into? Is that acting or wrestling or what? Or is that real life? Oh, it's real life. Yeah, right.
I've got to find another John Cena clip for you to watch on Total Bellas, because there's so much mileage in that.
Bring it on, Kenny. I'm ready.
Okay, I'll find one for next week. So John Cena was announced this past week as doing a one-night-only evening with event in England, in Sheffield.
That's right.
An evening with John Cena. The event's been cancelled, Finn.
Oh, has it? Wow.
The event has been cancelled because apparently, according to the promoters, in some messages that they sent out to some of their customers, the terms of the deal changed, or they weren't able to fulfill some of their commitments. From what I've been led to believe, it's a financial commitment. So what I want to know is, did you break into the offices of this company and steal all their money so that Cena wouldn't enter these shores again? Are you responsible, Finn?
I'm not guilty. I have nothing to do with this. I was aware that the event was happening. I was not aware that it had been cancelled, but I have no connection with this. And very disappointing for all the people who really wanted to go.
Yourself included, of course.
myself included as well. Yeah. But no, I mean, when things like this happen, people really get the hopes up, and then, you know, when the council is a huge disappointment for people. So, yeah, I feel sorry for the people who really wanted to go. Obviously, it doesn't affect me. I wasn't going to be going. But, you know, I'm a live and let live type of guy, Kenny. If Cena wants to make money and if people want to pay to watch him do an on-stage interview, that's up to them. It's got nothing to do with me. Anyway, it's not happening now, so yeah. I was not aware that it had been cancelled.
My favourite thing that you've ever said about John Cena, apart from calling him a massive dweeb, is that when I said, you know, I'd love to see you and Cena having dinner together, and then I said, but you'd have to travel to America, and you were like, well, he's not coming in my house. Just this idea of Cena in one of his suits looking like a big monkey chapping your door, being like, come on.
He probably wouldn't fit through the door, would he? He's got specially widened doors in that massive mansion.
Oh, God, specially widened doors. I can't do it. So where do we go from there? So this week on WWE television, let's kick off with this. Just generally, the whole kind of invasion under siege thing was continuing on Raw. We had Daniel Bryan going over and, you know, getting chokeslammed by Kane. On SmackDown, we had Shane giving a little bit more of an explanation as to why SmackDown striked first. So I guess my question to you is, I know you were very down on it last week. Do you feel the exact same way about it? And how has this week's television swayed you in either direction, more or less so?
It doesn't really feel like anything's moved along greatly. The only real difference, I'm not going to dwell on this at this moment in time, so I want to actually try and answer one of your questions for once, is the only real difference seemed to be the return of Stephanie McMahon to crack the whip, you know, to rally the troops in her own inimitable way. She doesn't exactly raise morale, does she, Kenny?
Do you get offended by words, Finn? Is there any word that offends you?
There are lots of words that offend me, yes.
Oh, damn. I mean, I feel like I have to use it, right? And I'm sorry, but ladies and gentlemen, you've heard me say this before. God, she's a cunt. Do you know what I mean? Oh. She's just the worst woman character. Like, remember last year at Survivor Series or the week before? She came out on Raw in Glasgow. I think it was in Glasgow, and she basically screamed at all five of the wrestlers, including Braun Strowman, about, you know, wrestle like your jobs depend on it, because they do, and flung down the microphone. Who would want to work for her?
Who would? You're right. Who
Nobody.
Would?
Nobody. And the most frustrating thing about her is that it's annoying because I wanted to say she is a good heel, but she's not, because she never lets anybody get comeuppance on her. She has the potential to be a good heel. People want to hate her. People want to dislike her. So just let somebody beat her up.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, do you remember? Here we go. We've done a U-turn. I've just said.
Why not?
We're just going to dwell on this. And here we are dwelling on it. More U-turns than the Tory party, Kenny. You know? But do you remember the night after Survivor Series 2001, after Team WWF had beaten the Alliance? And on the very next episode of Raw, Vince came out and fired Shane, fired Stephanie. If you go back and look at that, and Stephanie absolutely sold like a heel should have done. She was there screaming and kicking her legs and, you know, having a tantrum. And, like, I'm not really expecting her to do that now at her age, you know, all these years later. But there are lots of ways she could sell. And really, as a heel, your dignity is what it's all about, is your dignity as a heel. She's out there and she's got all her dignity as a heel. Obviously, the heels, she needs to be relieved of that by the babyface. You know, she needs to be humbled. She needs to be humiliated by the babyface. She needs to show, she needs to fail. She needs to put the face over by, you know, shining the face, by, you know, bowing to their superior intellect, smarts, you know, strategy, you know, skills, whatever. I mean, that's her job, supposedly, is to put the faces over. And she, as you say, she never does it. So she comes out there and does this big tyrannical heel thing, and the faces are there cowering in fear, you know, just looking like weak-willed losers. And it's not disappointing anymore, Kenny, because it's happened so often. But I guess the word is dispiriting. You're just like, oh, not again. You know, it's not like, you know, it's entirely consistent with her behavior from dating back many years. So no one should be surprised by this. But it still is, you know, very disheartening, I feel, seeing her do these things and never, as you say, putting the baby faces over or doing so reluctantly that it doesn't come close to counterbalancing the offences she's committed.
I mean, the thing, a couple of weeks ago, I got a copy of the 30 years of Survivor series DVD through, and it's just like a, you know, video thing with, like, you know, the top 30 moments in Survivor series history, and I'm watching it, and it shows me the main event from Survivor series 2014, where it was, you know, the Authority against Big Show, John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Ryback, whatever the team was. And I'm watching it, and, you know, Sting comes out and makes his debut, and Stephanie was great in that. She was fantastic, because she sold that, you know, if we lose here, we're gone, we're done. Yeah. And then they did have to leave, and they were done.
And for how long was that?
But then 6 weeks later, they're back. And it's like, you know, she'll do all these little things. And the problem is that, and I don't mean to be sexist, but, like, it shouldn't really be a woman having the lines that she has. Like, I remember when Sting was out on the Go Home Raw for WrestleMania 31, and she's like, "Hey, Sting, welcome to the big time." And you're like, that should be a male who Sting can just smack over the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have to stand there and take that from her. And no. Because she's so, like, viscerally unlikable, that you genuinely want to see that character, you know, experience sort of, like, you know, some sort of repercussion for all this action. And this year, all her repercussion was Triple H bumping into her and she falls through a table.
Yeah.
So, and I think the problem, I said this in the Raw Rundown with David, was that now we know that even if she does get her comeuppance, we have to go through, like, 6 months of just her, you know, railing through everybody for her to get one tiny thing done to her. So she takes 6 months off and then she comes back as the exact same character again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've been in this cycle now for many years. And this is the way it is, unfortunately. We've just got to tolerate it. I mean, it really is. It's sad for the talent. It really is sad for the talent who, if they're watching, like, you know, the Attitude Era stuff with Austin and Rock and the other baby faces versus Vince, and just seeing how Vince sold for the faces back then. I mean, there was probably few heels in history who were more enthusiastic about humiliating themselves to put the face over. I mean, the stuff that Vince put himself through was just, you're going back and look at it, it's like, it's almost hard to believe it happened, isn't it? Especially when you contrast it with what's going on now. And it was all about making the face stronger, so the face became a bigger star, and the whole system, the whole thing just worked. And yeah, it's like, I just don't know what Stephanie's malfunction is. You know, why she won't do these, you know, this is as old as the business itself, that the heel has to succumb to the face. I mean, and yet, as you just said, it doesn't happen with her. The rules are different. I think it's a real shame. I think it's a real shame for the talent. I mean, they all had to stand out there on the stage this week on Raw. I mean, they just, like, moved out of the way to let her pass, then moved out of the way when she walked back up. No one said anything. Kurt Angle was just totally humiliated. Yeah, just very, very disheartening. Yeah.
Well, also, see if Stephanie was just terrible as a performer, that'd be one thing, but she's a good performer.
She is.
That's right. The problem. That's what's so bad, is that if she was shite, I'd probably say, oh, well, you know, she's trying, but she's actually really good. And, you know, I mean, the thing I would point people to, if you want to go, well, you know, Stephanie's not effective, look at the lead up to WrestleMania 30 with Daniel Bryan. Look at even the stuff with Brie that she did. Like, I remember one of the biggest angles on Raw of recent memory was when Brie was in the crowd and Stephanie slapped her, and then Stephanie got arrested. And people were going crazy because she and Stephanie was such a good heel at how she played that whole thing that it got Brie Bella over more.
Yeah.
And Brie Bella was not exactly, you know, it wasn't like people were at the box office clamoring for Brie before.
No.
But Stephanie got it over.
Yeah.
And then killed on the match, so.
That is the frustrating thing, is that she knows how to do this. She's done it before many times, and she's choosing not to. And that's the thing that's really annoying about it. And it's not annoying in a I really hate the heel annoyance. It's not that. It's just irritating. It's just, oh no, do I have to watch this? Well, yes, of course I've got to watch it because I'm going to be commenting on it. But it's like, if you're a fan, I can imagine that she is fast forward material. It's like, you know, what really are you going to gain from seeing her in a segment? I mean, who really wants to see their wrestling heroes humbled by Stephanie? I mean, it's, you know, how does that make you root for the babyfaces? It doesn't. It has the opposite effect. So anyway, the question you asked, Kenny,
That's 30 minutes later, this tangent, which I
said we weren't going to go off on, and then...
People want us to go on tangents, though. Come on. People expect this from us. I've had numerous people who say, I love when you and Finn just go off on tangents. So I feel we're giving the people what they want.
Well, I'm glad about that, since that's what we do every week. I mean, as far as furthering the storyline, I don't really feel like it did a whole lot to further anything. I mean, to me, Raw this week was as much about... I mean, there was the comeback. Samoa Joe returned, didn't he? Nia Jax came back. Nia Jax really laid waste to Bayley, I felt, Kenny.
She did. And I... Oh, God, I'm so over Bayley. So over her. She's just...
She seems relevant now, didn't she?
Let me ask
it's
you a question.
Like another one.
Tell me the last Bayley match that you watched that you thought you saw a star and that she was really good in.
I mean, I'm not sure, because I mean, it's been a real struggle. Her entire WWE main roster WWE run has been like, there's been an asterisk next to almost every match, which is open close quote successful. Hasn't there really either fans booing her, or why is she doing that? The Bayley character is not supposed to break the rules, things like that. It seems like watching her on this week's Raw, it was again no surprise at all that she lost quickly to Nia Jax. I mean, Nia had only been off TV for a few weeks, but you know when someone returns, they're always going to want to heat them up with a big win. But to me, Bayley doesn't feel like an important character anymore. She doesn't feel like she could be champion again. So, I mean, probably the last match I really enjoyed of hers would have been the No Mercy match, the five-way. I mean, I enjoyed that. I thought that was a really good match. But she was not, you know, she was not the star of the match. The stars of the match for me were Nia Jax, who I thought entered a terrific performance, and Alexa Bliss, who won. So she was just more a supporting player, she was more like the glue really holding things together, because she is a really good in-ring performer, as we know. But as a character, she doesn't really feel like a player anymore. She doesn't feel like somebody that's going to challenge Alexa Bliss the night after Survivor Series and then win the women's title at the next pay-per-view. It's impossible for me to imagine that will happen, if you see what I mean, Kenny.
I do, 100%. I think for me, the last match that I think Bayley had, where she was a star and I loved it, was actually with Nia Jax. And it took place at TakeOver London.
I remember that match,
in December 20, because I am one of the people, maybe the minority, I did not like the Bayley Asuka series in NXT. I just didn't get clicked. It just didn't work for me. And nothing on her main roster run, nothing sticks out to me. Like, maybe there was stuff that I enjoyed at the time, but when I'm sitting thinking about it, I'm racking my brain, and I can't think of anything. I can't think of anything that I've seen on the main roster where I think, oh, that was really good. That's the Bayley that I want. I mean, that, and then I just keep thinking about that awful Alexa Bliss series that she had. And I think what's interesting is that I used to think that what Bayley's strength was that she's kind of, you know, she doesn't really cut a promo because she's very shy and she's just kind of, you know, a fan who's managed to succeed. And that's kind of part of her downfall now, because she's not really got, like, a lot of the characters, like Nia Jax, she doesn't really need to cut promos because she's a monster, you know?
Yeah.
But like, if you can't talk that well and you're not really getting a good reaction from the crowd and your matches aren't setting MD on fire, like, I think you're in trouble.
Well, you are. Yeah, absolutely. You are in trouble. It's like you look at Bayley and you're thinking about the WWE creative team and what are they going to see in Bayley? How can they make Bayley into their top female performer? And knowing how they think, I don't think they see her as somebody who can lead the division. I mean, they really like Alexa Bliss. We know that. I mean, some people don't think she's that great in the ring, and there are others who are better than her, but I think based on her experience level, I think she's really quite good. And also as a character, she knows what she's doing. She knows her character. She knows what she's supposed to do when she gets out there. And I think Alexa believes that the creative team believe in her. And that's a huge part of getting over and believing in yourself as a wrestler, knowing that the company is behind you, or at least believing that the company is behind you. And I think looking at Bayley right now, that she knows that she's lost. You know, she doesn't really have a clear direction because the company doesn't really know what to do with her.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting. I thought that
I think there's a lot of people on the roster who are in the same boat as Bayley, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there are. A friend of mine, Sarah, watches WWE on a more casual level than a lot of us, and I asked her about this whole under siege invasion thing, and she loves it. And I said, "What is it you love about it?" And she said, "I just love that like the brands are fighting and they're trying to one up each other, and like there's chaos and da da da." And I was like, that's interesting, because to a casual audience, that is how they see it, and that's what they enjoy it for. Whereas, like, we're looking for more. I did like this week that Shane, had a little bit more of an explanation in his promo about, this is why we wanted to attack, Raw got double the draft picks that we did, and da-da-da-da. They're trying to tell a little bit. I think they still need to tell us more. But the thing that like is funny is a lot of people say, "Oh, Shane seemed like a real heel," when they attacked last week, and then when Stephanie came back, you were like, "Oh no, Shane's a real babyface." there's nothing heel about Shane. Stephanie's just the worst. But I think the glory of this week, and I really hope that you loved this, because if you didn't, I don't know how we can continue podcasting together. The return of Braun Strowman.
I loved it.
Oh my god. How good was it?
I don't even know what you're going to say. I was just saying that for humorous effect.
Oh, no. I thought the return of Braun Strowman.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, no, you didn't like it? Oh, no. He came out of a garbage truck, fully fine, and leaped over a vehicle and chased the Miz Taraj and murdered them. I mean, what can you not like there?
I mean, it was just like... It was like Final Deletion levels of insanity, wasn't it? it was like the the Final Deletion invades Raw. I mean, I wrote this on Facebook, Kenny. I'm still trying to fathom how Braun Strowman was A, in no way harmed by the compactor machinery in the rubbish bin truck at TLC. B, managed to survive for 8 days in the back of the truck, and C, made the decision to exit the truck to leave the Miz a bag of rubbish backstage as a clue and then return to the truck to lie in wait for the Miz in order to ambush him when the Miztourage were about to depart in the limousine. I'll try and explain that one, Kenny.
He's such a genius, isn't he? I mean, Einstein's got nothing on that lineage that you've just described.
I mean, it's just completely... Just completely nuts, it was entertaining in that completely outrageous, over the top WWE kind of way. You're not allowed to think about it at all. If you start thinking about it like I did, I mean, I wrote that for comic effect as well, but if you start thinking about this at all, You basically miss the point of this, which is that it's just supposed to be ridiculous.
But do you think sometimes, like, you know, you've got like 205 Live who are kind of doing the kind of, you know, high flying wrestling stuff, and you, there's, you know, the level of wrestling in ring quality right now in 2017, just in the world, is fantastic, right? It's great.
Yeah, of course it is.
I couldn't give a flying fuck about 5-star matches. Does nothing for me. Give me a big bastard coming out of a garbage truck, leaping over vehicles to kill people, and I'm all in. I'm all in.
Yeah, it was. It does crack me up that, you know, the Miz is backstage saying, it's a bag of garbage. This is a message from Braun Strowman, and he just sort of knew. It's just like, wow. I tell you, Miz, this wrestling thing doesn't work out. You can always become a sleuth. He managed to solve the case. Incredible.
Please just indulge me. Can you one more time for everyone? Because I think people, maybe they weren't intensely listening the first time. Read that little Facebook post out again about the things that you were thinking about with the Braun Strowman. Because that is actually genius, what you came up with.
I'm still trying to fathom how Braun Strowman was A, in no way harmed by the compactor machinery in the rubbish bin truck at TLC, B, managed to survive for 8 days in the back of the truck, and C, made the decision to exit the truck to leave the Miz a bag of rubbish backstage as a clue, and then return to the truck to lie in wait for the Miz in order to ambush him when the Miztourage were about to depart in the limousine.
Superb. Yeah. Superb. So good.
Just, 8 days between that. But I mean, he must have just been in there. He must have just been in there for 8 days, Kenny. I know we're not allowed to think about this, but if we don't think about it and just like nanosecond thought, first thing that comes into your mind, he must have been in there for 8 days. That can be the only explanation.
Do you know the first thing that came into my mind when I saw him?
What was that?
Is I thought, see, for someone who's spent the last 8 days in a garbage truck, he's managed to oil himself, he's managed to get his hair all perfect, and that can't have been a big space. And he was in the dark. Dressed in the dark and do my hair, I'd be fucked.
Well, everyone's got to look in pristine condition in WWE. You know, nothing's allowed to not look perfect.
How does Kane get away with it then? Look at his gut.
What got me was at TLC when Elias is there playing the guitar. And then Jason Jordan came out with the shopping trolley full of vegetables. The vegetables, fruit vegetables that he was chucking at Elias were fresh. It's as if he'd just been picked seconds before he went out. There's no way WWE would allow rotten fruit to appear on its show. It's got to be fresh. It's got to be pristine. You know, that's the way they do things.
I also just, it's come into my, so last night I got to go to the WWE house show in Glasgow, and I've got to say, a great card. A really, really great card. I'm just going to run that down for you. But the highlight, or one of the highlights, was Elias decided to give us a song.
Okay.
And Elias decided, so he's playing his guitar, right? And I'm going, I'm sure that's Wonderwall that he's playing on the guitar. I'm thinking, is that Wonderwall? So basically he comes out, he starts playing Wonderwall on the guitar, and he's like, you guys know this, come on, sing along. And then he sings the first line of Wonderwall, and everybody's cheering. He said, oh, I've made a new line for you. And his line was, today I came to Glasgow and I knew I would hate this place. And just did a Glasgow-specific line about Wonderwall. And I was just like, this guy, I never want to see him wrestle. But Elias is just so good at being a dick with a guitar and doing these songs. Can we not have him manage somebody where he can do all this and then like somebody can wrestle for him? That'd be better than having to watch him wrestle.
Yeah, he's just so middle of the road as a wrestler, isn't he? He's just not interesting. That's the problem with him. He's just not very exciting. I mean, he's competent and he's solid. You know, I hate that word, solid. And it's just like, it's almost an insult. You know, he's a solid worker. It's almost like an insult, isn't it? It's like, you might as well say you're a pedestrian worker.
Yeah.
You know, you're a boring worker. You know, you do what everyone does. And that really is what Elias is in the ring. I mean, he's you know, some of the matches he has are okay. But I mean, it's hard to get excited about an Elias match, you know?
Very much so. Well, let me run through the card for you. So we had Asuka versus Mickey James in a very fun match to open the show. Then we had The Miz with The Miztourage. Got to give props to Curtis Axel, who came out in a full neck brace with his suit on. Very much appreciated. The Miz cuts a promo before the match where he says, "I will not begin wrestling until I've taken my sunglasses and robe off." Then we got, after that, we got an 8-man tag. It was Jason Jordan, Rhino, Heath Slater, and Goldust against Elias, The Club, and Bo Dallas. Then we got Enzo Amore versus Kalisto for the Cruiserweight title. Ugh, fucker. Pete Dunne versus Wolfgang for the UK title. Then we got Braun Strowman versus Kane. Then we had Intermission, not the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Second half, we had Sasha and Bayley against Nia and Alexa. We had Finn Balor versus Samoa Joe. And the main event was Triple H with Rollins and Ambrose against Bray Wyatt, Sheamus, and Cesaro. So quite a card, I thought.
Yeah. Sounds like a hell of a card, Kenny. I wish I could have been there.
I know. Well, we will be together very soon, I'm sure. Also, in terms of stuff that's been going on in the world of wrestling, I want you to make a guess for me. What do you think is the biggest selling wrestling t-shirt outside of WWE and the Hot Topic Bullet Club stuff?
Inside the Ropes.
Very good. Very good. Not quite, but I appreciate the brand recognition. It is Pro Wrestling Tees with the Cease and Desist t-shirt.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I was aware of that t-shirt.
So props again to the Young Bucks for that. The Young Bucks also who did an angle at Comic-Con this past weekend where I think it was the Young Bucks and Kazarian and Daniels did an angle where Daniels and Kazarian attacked them, and then the Young Bucks hit them with super kicks and put them through tables, which is kind of cool that they're doing angles at Comic Cons and stuff, you know, it makes it seem...
Yeah, definitely, yeah, terrific. Absolutely.
So, talk to me a little bit about, we touched on Raw a little bit. Anything else on Raw that you wanted to chat about and that caught your eye, good or bad?
I would like to say that, you know, we talked about the Stephanie burial of Kurt Angle. Did you know, Kenny, that they replayed that twice? Not once, but twice. They replayed that segment.
I wish they never replayed it ever again. I don't ever want to see it. It's horrible. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Once again, Michael Cole said, the one night of the year, Survivor Series, the one night of the year, Raw and SmackDown superstars go head-to-head in competition. It isn't. But everyone's saying this. It's almost that thing, well, we've just got to keep saying it and eventually people will believe it. So I found that quite annoying. Finn Balor made a comeback. He defeated Cesaro. So I thought he might get a win after he'd put Kane over the previous week. And then I thought, I'm going to make... Oh, great, great result there for Finn. And then what happened? Kane came out on the stage and gave him the tombstone. So everything that had just happened was sort of undone.
So I'm curious your take here. Because last week it kind of felt like it was just, you know, Finn Balor was being killed by Kane and that's kind of it. And this week they give Finn Balor the big win over Cesaro, and then they have Kane attack him again. I mean, it feels like we must be leading to something with Finn and Kane, right?
Well, you would think so. Well, I mean, as you just said from your report there in Glasgow, obviously this is going to lead to a Kane and Braun Strowman match, isn't it? I mean, this is, you know, what all this is all about. I mean, it's, you know, it takes you back to No Mercy, where Braun Strowman was defeated far too easily by Brock Lesnar, so Strowman's aura is not totally ruined, but suffered some pretty bad damage. So then it's like, right, okay, we've knocked this guy down. So what we need to do is we need to then build him back up. We need to build him back up and really make amends for what we've done. So how are we going to do that? I know, let's bring Kane back. We'll have him beat all these young guys in the 30s and really look dominant. And then we can feed Kane to Braun Strowman. So Strowman will be back to where he was before we sacrificed him to Brock Lesnar. And this kind of booking, it's been going on for years, Kenny, and it means that no one, it means that you don't ever really create a true main eventer because you're not really thinking ahead and you're doing things without really planning ahead and really thinking it through. So I just sort of feel like everything that's going on right now is intended to build Strowman back up to the level that he was before he lost to Lesnar. So that's my take on it. I mean, obviously it's going to be Kane Strowman, and Strowman will have to win because Kane is in his 50s, is a part-time act. And you know, it's not, it doesn't take a genius to see that that's what's going to happen. But you would hope that after Strowman has defeated Kane, that we'll then get a demon versus demon match between Finn and Kane. You know, that would make sense. And since they've just had Finn Balor as a demon, they're going to have to give it a little bit of time's going to have to pass before he can put the makeup on again. So I can imagine that after Strowman has beaten Kane, then Finn will get his revenge on Kane. That's what I see happening.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a solid plan. I do want to ask you a hypothetical question that I think people listening would want to know the answer to. So Kane and Booker T have something in common. Do you know what that is?
Well, isn't Booker running for mayor of Houston?
Yes, so Booker's running for mayor of Houston and Kane's running for mayor.
Isn't that just the most amazing thing ever? Booker running for mayor of Houston.
But so, and then Kane is running for mayor of Knoxville, I think it is. So my question to you is, if Glenn Jacobs and Booker Huffman decided they'd had enough of the limelight, they'd had enough of America, and they all upped sticks and moved to Lancashire, where you reside, and they both ran for mayor of Lancashire, Kane and Booker T, who would you vote for and why? Who would get the vote for your mayor of your lovely home, Kane or Booker T?
It would have to be Kane. I mean, I still remember Booker's appearance on The Weakest Link. I still remember that. A lot of people are saying that Booker on Raw, he's sort of playing a character, and he may be to some extent, but go back and watch Booker's performance on The Weakest Link. You know, maybe he's not playing, maybe only a little bit of his character, and most of it is the real Booker Huffman. You know, you've seen it, Kenny. You remember it. I mean, it was not a good performance by Booker on that show, was it?
Do you know, I can honestly say I never thought I'd remember that again. But you are correct. I don't know how he was able to get on the ballot with that performance, to be honest.
I have no idea either. So Glenn Jacobs, from what I understand, is a pretty bright guy. I have no idea if he's going to win this election. I would think not.
Do you think maybe he could use to his advantage that he has tombstone pile driven a member of the Trump cabinet?
Well, possibly, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I never even thought about that.
And we know he's adaptive. He's been to anger management when things got rough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He has. And he's played lots of different characters. What about his performance when he was in The Authority? I mean, wearing a suit, he looked pretty good in a suit. I mean, what more do you need to be mayor? He just looked good in a suit, right?
Exactly. He got on very well with HR. We saw that in his corporate Kane run.
He did, that's right. I mean, he could carry out orders and he was very good at communicating messages to talent and other members of staff. So, I mean, you know, maybe I'm misjudging Glenn Jacobs. Maybe he really does have a shot at this. But I don't think I would really want him to be mayor of my city, if I'm honest with you, Kenny.
I don't think there's anything I'd enjoy more than watching you turn up at town hall meetings about, you know, some sort of community centre and you just get Kane in a suit with the mask on.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's like, is that wrestling has given him this celebrity and has given him this profile, which will enable him to run for public office. But in many ways, that can also, like Jerry Lawler tried it, didn't he? I mean, he's synonymous with Memphis and has been his entire life. I mean, by being a celebrity, by being a wrestler, that's enabled you to do this. But also, is that gonna deter people from voting for you. I mean, they may not actually listen to what you've got to say in terms of, you know, issues or the platform you're running on or whatever it is that you want to do to improve the city. Maybe they'll just think of you wearing a mask, a ridiculous wig, and nailing other wrestlers with tombstone pile drivers or chucking them in the back of rubbish bin trucks. So maybe it will backfire on him, you know. So, you know. But it's very amusing that these two guys are running for mayor, and you know, great that they can do it. You know, that is one of the things, they can do this. You know, and I'm sure there were people when Arnold Schwarzenegger ran for governor of California, wasn't it? Governor of California, yep. He was. I'm sure there were many people thought, oh, he doesn't have a chance, and he ran. I mean, I have no idea whether he was a success in that role. I think he was. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, apparently he made California a completely, like, they do a lot of stuff with solar energy, and you know, they're a completely green state and stuff like that. So he's done a lot of good things for that state. From what
I believe that to be true. Yeah. So I mean, I'm sure there were people who scoffed when he was running. But yeah, as you say, he did a lot of good things for the state. You know, Ronald Reagan, if you want to take it back to the 60s, he'd been an actor, and he became governor of California and then became US president in 1980 and reelected in 1984. So I mean, you know, these things can happen, you know. You know, but they can. You know, these people can do well in these things. And I think a big part of it for Kane is all about public speaking and convincing people that you know what you're on about. And you know, Jacobs knows all about public speaking, communicating with people, and that's obviously a huge part of it, as we saw last year with Donald Trump. You know, he convinced enough Americans to vote for him, didn't he, Kenny?
He did. Well, I mean, he actually lost, but they have that weird thing where it's not the most people that voted again. It's the Electoral College or something?
That's right. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah. Hillary Clinton did get more votes, didn't she?
My favourite thing politically in the States was, I think it was the first time that Linda McMahon ran for Senate. I want to say it's the first. It could have been the second. But anyway, she was doing the media rounds, and she went on a popular American daytime show called The View, which has got Whoopi Goldberg's a host on it, etc. And she's doing this interview. I think Barbara Walters was still there at the time. And Barbara Walters is interviewing Linda McMahon, and she's talking about, you know, what she would do when she's in the Senate. And I shit you not, the screen in the background is, you know, showing different, you know, snaps of Linda. And out of nowhere, as she's talking about what she's going to do for the economy, you see her getting tombstoned by Kane. And I just thought, this is superb.
This is, you know, this is what the producers think of her chances. And they were right.
You know? Yeah. Oh, God. SmackDown. What did you think of SmackDown this week? Any highlights or lowlights that you want to tackle? I know you were very... ladies and gentlemen, Finn, you know, we're coming up to Survivor Series. There's going to be I think the men's 5-on-5 could be a tremendous match.
Yeah.
You were telling me off air, the match you're most looking forward to at Survivor Series is the United States Championship match between Baron Corbin and Sin Cara.
Sin Cara? Oh, I mean, during the Baron Corbin versus Sin Cara match, so this is 3 weeks running that we've had to watch this match, right? And this is 3 weeks running as well without a finish. During the match, I think it was one of the announcers, could have been Michael Cole, he said that Baron Corbin and The Miz had been promoting their Survivor Series match on Twitter. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, the TV's done nothing at all to promote this match. So it's a good job we've got Twitter, Kenny. Instead, I mean, Baron Corbin, the guy who led the under siege invasion of Raw and looked like a killer, took an absolute pasting from Sin Cara on this week's SmackDown, then fled from him like a, you know, just like a coward. I mean, it was just, I mean, people say, oh, it's great that Sin Cara's getting a push. Well, why is it great?
Who's saying that?
Well, I've read some stuff online, people saying that. I mean, all sorts of people have all sorts of opinions, Kenny. And everyone's entitled to their own opinions on whatever they want to have opinions on, Kenny. But Sin Cara, it's just like, where has this come from? And I thought that when Cara beat Corbin by count out 3 weeks ago, or three episodes back, I thought the following week Corbin would come back and score a convincing victory and that would be it. Instead, we had the DQ finish. And then on week three, we've had Cara completely beating the hell out of Corbin and Corbin running. I mean, you know, where's the consistency, Kenny? That's the thing that really was bothering me there, was that we've got Sin Cara, who's, I can't believe he's ever going to amount to anything in this company or anything of any great value. I think last week I called him one of like the most useless babyface in wrestling, and I stand by that. So why is he beating up this guy who's in a title? Well, I know the titles aren't on the line in the matches at Survivor Series, but is in a champion versus champion match with The Miz at Survivor Series and was, you know, led the show of force for the Under Siege Raw. I don't get it at all, Kenny. Don't get it at all.
Yeah, it's a very strange decision. I mean, that people say, oh, well, Sin Cara's getting a push because he's been re-signed. And it's like, I don't care, though. Like, Sin Cara's rubbish. And every time I see him, he looks older.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't mean that, like, obviously, we all get older. I mean, apparently, Finn, that you look older than you sound, which was my favourite comment that's ever come out about you.
Somebody wrote that. What did you do? Is that a compliment? Is that an insult? I mean, where'd you go with that comment?
Oh, it's so good.
It's best not to think about it like Braun Strowman in the rubbish bin truck.
I remember when I was working at What Culture, they would do this thing at the WCPW shows where there would be in-ring photo ops with the What Culture personalities. And I would like always try to not have to do it because I found it very awkward because I just don't really know. And plus, I'm like, I don't really feel that you should have to pay money to be in a photo with me in a ring. Like, it's just so it's just not, you know, listen, if you meet me and you want a photo, come up, say hi, you get a photo. Money should not be exchanged for that. Like, come on. So anyway, but you know, I would end up doing it and whatever, and there'd be me and Jack and the others. And I remember this one time, I was trying to be nice, and this guy got in the ring, and I went to shake his hand, and he just walked straight past me because he was like, he was there for the other personalities, and they all just were cackling with laughter because I'm going, I don't even want to fucking be here, prick. And you just walk. Listen, see, if you go in a ring and there's five people, you just shake their fucking hand. Okay, who gives a fuck if you don't like one of them or don't know who they are? Just be polite. Fucking fat prick that he was. Anyway.
So it didn't bother you at all then, Kenny, right?
No, I just breezed off the shoulder. You know?
Water off a duck's back.
Water off a duck's back.
I had something similar. Let me just, something similar. Many years ago, I was at a British wrestling show, and a well-known British wrestler at the time, I was at the wrestling show with Rob Butcher. It was, as everyone knows, worked for Power Slam for many years. And we were at this show, and this wrestler came over and knew Rob. I was saying, well, what do you think to the match, Rob? You know, what do you reckon to it? You know, really wanted his approval and thinking that we were going to do something in Power Slam. And he just like basically brushed past me like I wasn't even there. Just totally ignored me. He had no idea who I was. I just thought that was hilarious. So I just But there again, that was by design, Kenny. You know, I managed to remain anonymous for many years. So I can't, you know, it was just a funny moment. I'm not going to mention the wrestler's name. How would he know what I look like?
That's it. It's funny. You had that anonymity down. I can't remember the first time that I even saw a picture of you. And I remember when we met earlier on this year, and I just, when you were talking, I was like, oh my God, that voice comes out of a person. Because I just said, you just can't compute that a face and a person and a voice are the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, I
did appear in, I think I was in a couple of Superstars of Wrestling's, and I think I was in some of the Power Slams, but you'd have to go way back. So, but from, I don't know, 97 onwards or something, I was never in it. No, of course I wasn't. I was very pleased to be anonymous, Kenny, and it was nice that people wouldn't recognise you. So,
Did you want to cover anything else from SmackDown before we move on?
What else was on the show?
We had Nakamura qualifying over Kevin Owens for the team. Bobby Roode qualifies.
Yeah, definitely want to acknowledge the Dolph Ziggler versus Bobby Roode match. I thought that was their first good match. I really enjoyed that. That exceeded expectations. So I definitely want to acknowledge that. Bobby Roode had a bit of a hard time on the promo afterwards, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it was that. I mean, I'd read about it before I watched it, and then I didn't think it was that bad. Like, it was... he botched it, obviously, but the way it was, like, you know, spoken about online, you would have thought he'd said the Silverdome, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, really, it was... I mean, the match was good. I mean, I think Dolph Ziggler backstage afterwards, on, I think it was a WWE.com interview, he really put Roode over. So that was nice. It was nice to draw a line under that feud and nice to see Bobby Roode leave a match with some momentum, which is the first time that's happened on the main roster. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was a bit strange that Shane McMahon in the opening segment brought up Daniel Bryan's appearance on Raw and with him being attacked by Kane. And then Shane said, there's going to be hell to pay for that. Hey, as if Raw and SmackDown are anywhere near to even, Kenny. After what they did the previous week, it's nowhere near even. You know, so I thought that was, hang on a minute, Shane. You led your guys the previous week and completely destroyed about 20 people. And one of SmackDown's guys has been beaten up. We're not even close to even yet, Kenny, in my opinion. So
I think we know what colour a t-shirt Finn Martin's going to be wearing at Survivor Series.
Exactly. So I'm imagining the Raw invasion. Well, I don't know, it'd be next week in Manchester. If not next week, it'll probably be on the go-home SmackDown that Raw will come in and do the big beatdown. So I thought that was a bit odd. I watched the Styles Simia Singh match, and Simia Singh was pinned in, by my calculations, 36 seconds. So he didn't fare very well against AJ Styles either.
Nope, he did not. He did not. It's,
I thought Jinder's promo as well about referring himself as the Beastmaster was one of the wackiest things. Almost couldn't be wackier than the Braun Strowman Bin Truck angle, but wasn't far off. Jinder said, I've wrote this down, so I might as well share this with the listeners. Jinder said, fear is setting in Brock Lesnar, and at Survivor Series, the Beast will be beaten. The Beast will be victimized. The Beast will be conquered. And I will forever be known as the Beastmaster. Jinder Mahal really said those words. And Beastmaster was the name of like a really crap film from 1982. And Corey Graves even made a reference to it right after Jinder had done his promo. So, yeah,
what
I thought
that... World. What a world to live in. Oh, God.
But, I mean, once again, there was no conviction at all from Jinder. I just can't believe that he believed what he was saying.
I mean, the thing is, Jinder has got this opportunity coming up at Survivor Series, and it's make or break. That's what it is, you know, because you can have all your matches with different wrestlers in the roster, but when you do a Lesnar match, it's a different scale of what you're doing, you know, and there's big pressure on him. I almost feel for the guy.
Yeah.
That, like, he's not put in one performance since he's been champion in the ring that has felt big.
No, you're right.
So,
he hasn't.
But you know what? I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he nails it. I hope he does really well. But yeah, it's going to be a hard task for him. I do want to bring up, as we kind of wind down here, we are going to be doing a PowerSlam overrun, which will be available on Patreon, where we're going to cover some Impact stuff and some UK stuff and Raw's 25th anniversary. We'll cover that on there. But before we kind of head off, WWE did announce some releases over the weekend. They announced that Emma, Summer Rae, and Darren Young were all going to be released in their contracts. Emma, probably the most surprising, given that Darren Young and Summer Rae had been sparsely used over the last couple of years. But Emma was, you know, facing Asuka at TLC in the next night on Raw. What did you make of the releases, and I guess more specifically, Emma?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, it had to be. Emma tweeted like a little picture of a broken heart, indicating that she was heartbroken by the decision. I mean, I would be as well if this, if this had been a dream job. She just had the match with Asuka at TLC. It was a long match, as we mentioned last week in the podcast. She looked a lot stronger, particularly in the TLC match, than anyone imagined she would. And she also had quite a lot of offense in the Raw rematch. So it was very surprising that she would be booked like that and then cut just days later. Also, she was released from a contract just after the company had reported a quarterly after-tax profit of $21.8 million. So that had to sting as well, Kenny, I would imagine.
Yeah, I feel for Emma. I think that I wrote a kind of piece on Facebook about it, actually, in our community, and I think there's a lot of different things at play. I think the fact that she had that gimmick for 17 weeks that she then wasn't able to carry off probably didn't do her any favours. She's had a few injuries, which timing-wise have not really been good for her. She was paired with Santino Marella in one of the worst pairings I've ever seen in my life. So it's a strange decision.
It is, absolutely. I mean, I felt that she was really finding her feet, and she'd had something of a push on TV, and they were creating a character for her that was individual to her. And I felt that they could have done a lot more with it. I felt that she'd really got herself in amazing shape. If you go back to 2014 when she was first called up, she didn't look like she does now. I think as a performer, there's people better than her, but I don't think she's bad at all. I felt that she's pretty good in the ring. I think she's more than adequate. I guess a lot of factors contributed to it. I think it's got to be difficult for female performers. As male performers, like Neville, for instance, he's got lots of options. Emma will have options as well. I mean, on the autograph circuit, and people, I'm sure, will be calling her once her... They normally have like about a 90-day period, don't they, where they're paid for 90 days and then they can start accepting independent bookings. That's normally the way it works, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be interesting because she's arguably the first female that we're going to see how... Like, I mean, Emma's kind of like the... Somewhat like a Cody Rhodes thing of like, she's good, she wasn't really given as many opportunities as she probably should have been, and now she can go in the indies and kind of see what's out there. But I don't know if there's any woman that you can think of that maybe in the last couple of years has had a similar thing to, like, the Drew McIntyre, Cody Rhodes thing, where they leave and, you know, basically have to rebuild themselves.
I think it's definitely more difficult for women. I think it's probably, well, it's more difficult for women than it is for men, but it's probably easier for women now than it's ever been because there's a lot of female performers out there working. I think she'll be able to command some good money at first, and then that will decrease, but she'll have to do really what the Cody and Drew did, which is not live off the WWE name and gimmick and try and come up with something and become, you know, a player on her own with a view to one day perhaps getting rehired by creating a new character for herself or really changing things and taking some chances, which, as we know, is something that Vince greatly respects. When talent go out there and really try and push the envelope and do different things, that's something that he does admire. It's up to her, really. I mean, I think it's a real shame that she was canned, and the timing of it must be, as she indicated with the symbol, must be heartbreaking for her.
So, I mean, you know, she will be that first test of a female performer. I had a coughing fit there, by the way, so I had to mute my mic just out of the blue. I think that she's got a good chance. If she really wants it, which I think she probably does, then I think there's definitely a space for her to go out and do something.
Definitely. We wish her all the best for sure. I mean, I think she, you know, she... She made that mistake back in 2014, you know, when she got sacked over the iPad case incident. And then she was actually rehired the same day, wasn't she? Back in 2014. Do you remember that, Kenny?
I do.
So, and she had another chance. But her career basically stalled after that. And she went back to NXT and then she came back up. And, you know, the whole Emelina thing was, I never really understood that at all, Kenny. I never understood what they're doing. And then they just dropped it. So she's had a lot of setbacks, which makes it even more perplexing to me that she was released when she was, because she, you know, really felt like she was going somewhere.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes in WWE there's decisions like that happen, or people leave or are released, and you just can't really work out why. Timing doesn't really make sense. Like Emma being released doesn't surprise me as is, because she's not someone who is one of their top women that they push. But the timing of her just having new music, pay-per-view match with Asuka, that's more for me what's the strange timing of it all.
Yeah, I mean, as for Darren Young and Summer Rae, I mean, they were not being used, so that's perfectly understandable why they were caught. But, I mean, surely no less disappointing for those two.
So as we kind of finish off here, something that we haven't really talked about, it is a bit of a plug, but I think it's worth talking about, is you and I are both part of the Wrestle Talk magazine that's just become available. You can get that at wrestletalk.bigcartel.com. It's quite a big deal actually for you to be a part of a magazine again, especially given, you know, that you're basically the guy that we associate with wrestling magazines in this country and stuff. How has it been for you to get involved in something again?
Yeah, I was flattered that I was asked, and it feels like a comeback of sorts for me as a writer. I mean, I thought after that last book that I was through, that I wasn't really going to be writing in depth about wrestling again. I've done some stuff for some websites, but not really any writing on this sort of level. I'm pleased to be back, Kenny. It just feels right, and I'm really excited about where it's going to lead, you know, not only for the magazine, but for me as a writer as well. I'm having some ideas about things that I may do next year, and there are other things that we don't really want to talk about now that I'm hoping are going to come to fruition. So I'm really excited about it, Kenny. I'm really excited to see where the magazine goes. We're about to start work on issue 2, and on Dan's hard at work on it now, and you're going to be contributing to the next issue, and so am I. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm sure you are as well. So yeah, we're gung ho about it, I think is the term. Really, really excited to see where it goes and see what we can do with it.
Yeah, 100%. So with that in mind, you can head over and get issue 1 actually at wrestletalk.bigcartel.com. You can get a digital copy, or you can order the print copy. I got a copy through the post to have a read at, and the best compliment I can give it is it feels like a big modern day kind of power slam, which is what you want, really. That's what we all want. We all want something that can remind us of those glory days, Finn. By us, I mean power slam readers.
yeah, definitely. And hopefully it's going to attract a new generation of fans who will be keen to read it and keen to send off for it. It's not in the shops, but if you read Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam years, you'll understand how difficult it is to make that work. So, we're all really, really hoping that this is gonna go from strength to strength next year. And I'm sure everyone's got the same mindset here, that they're absolutely committed to this and want to see this work. And I've got a really good feeling about it and about its future as well. You know, what do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I think it's going to be good. I think the first issue was really, really strong. I'm glad that there's some, nods to Power Slam that I'm glad are around. Seeing you cover a pay-per-view in print is gives me a nice, fluffy, nostalgic feeling. So,
I really enjoyed writing the piece. I mean, I spent a long time on it, and it was really nice because in Power Slam, because it was such a rush and I was writing so much of it, there was some stuff in there that you would have liked a few more hours on, or, you know, half an hour on. But with this here, I mean, it was the only piece I contributed. And the term I used to use, I felt I did a Rolls Royce job on it, Kenny. It was really good to take your time. And that was the thing I loved about doing the 3 books, is that you were able to take your time and just get it right and rewrite it. And that's the secret to being a good writer, is to rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and just keep rewriting, and eventually you'll get it. And I was really pleased with the piece that I contributed to WrestleTalk magazine. And I'm I'm sure that I'll be just as pleased with the piece or pieces that I contribute to issue two.
So with that in mind, Finn, where can people get in touch with you if they want to perhaps take a read of the excellent Power Slam e-books that are available? There's one that covers the 20 years of Power Slam magazine, a lot of nice behind-the-scenes stuff of what went on, and also the interview books as well. Or if they just want to see your face, which is now available to view. So where can they go for all of that?
Yeah, they can find all that information at finleymartin.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter at finleymartin and at powerslam online. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me on Twitter at kennymc1985. As we've been recording this, Dave Meltzer has corrected the intermission thing by saying it was a hoax by a UK reporter, so I think I'm blacklisted.
Fantastic.
I'm blacklisted for my banter. But you can follow me if you want more of it at KennyMC1985. And you can follow the brand at @inside_the_ropes. Ugh, what the fuck's going on? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. And Finn, we'll be back next week, won't we?
We certainly will be. I'm looking forward to it. Well, I think we're going to have quite a lot to talk about next week, Kenny.
We will. There's Bound for Glory. There's a lot of other stuff. And usually we finish off the episode by playing the outro to our theme song for the Power Slam podcast. But not this week, because this Sunday there is a train that is bound for glory and nobody's fucking on it. So we're going to play that song for you. We'll be back next week to talk about Impact, WWE, and a whole lot more. We'll see you next week.
See you then.
If I'm sad tonight.